You're listening to Packers Talk Network. PackersTalk.com.
Welcome to the Packers Weekly Podcast, part of PackersTalk.com Network. I'm your host, Miles Tedek, joined by your co-host, Tim Hamilton. We are diehard Packers fans. We just love talking about the Pack. We are not getting all distracted by national sports media talking points and all the nonsense they waste time with. We are sticking to the top topics around the Pack every week, breaking down games during the season and sorting through all of the drama and the rumors and the draft stuff of the offseason. If y'all want to support the podcast, please spike that like button for us. Most importantly, hop on over to YouTube, type in Packers Talk Network, hit that little subscribe button next to us. We would love it if you would do that. It means a lot to us. And only takes you a few seconds and a few clicks of the buttons. Really low effort thing there. So help us on out there. Love it. Love all the subscribers and all of you who jump in with us every week here on Monday nights to talk some Pack. Comment section usually lights up. Appreciate y'all. And tonight we got a little bit of breaking news, so that'll be fun to talk about. I think some welcome breaking news for most Packer fans, is safe to say. But first, take care of some business. Our show is, of course, once again, sponsored by Wisconsin's own Ticket King. For over 30 years, Ticket King has been providing Packers tickets to Packers fans, as well as Bucks, Brewers, Summerfest, all the stuff, all the tickets you need for the fun stuff going on in Wisconsin and in maybe some surrounding areas. We won't name any NFC North territory, but I know that maybe some of those areas can be fun to play in the summer. You can find them on the web at theticketking.com or visit their locations in Green Bay and Milwaukee. Remember, support those local Wisconsin businesses. And if you are not in Wisconsin, support your local businesses. Tim, good evening, sir. How we doing, man?
Good evening. Doing really good. Back from vacation, and we are a couple days away now from starting training camp, and some big breaking news to get to tonight as we start, you know, looking ahead to camp and previewing what's to come.
Absolutely, absolutely. And one of our first chatters is, of course, a Vikings fan. So welcome, Bob Swede. We welcome the rivalry talk. NFC North, all are welcome, but you know, we will wear the crown at the end of the season, as long as you guys are okay with that. So we've got some breaking news here. Zach Tom signs a deal. He's our guy. 4 years, 30 plus guaranteed. I think the max value of the contract was somewhere around $92 million. Tim, feel good about this? Any complaints about this? Is this just as obvious as I think it is? Great news.
Yeah, I think it's great news. I have no problem with it. I think it's going to be a contract that we look back on in a year or two and say they did great business with it. Like, I definitely think it's a good deal for the Packers. It's a good deal for Zach Tom. I know, obviously, he's getting a ton of money. It's great for him. But I think it's an awesome deal for the Packers. I have no issues with it. He's now the third highest paid right tackle, which seems about right. Coincidentally, if he finished, I believe he finished third in voting for All Pro last year at right tackle, behind Lane Johnson, Penei Sewell, and those are the two guys that make more than him at right tackle. So it kind of works out that way. And when you look at what tackles get paid in free agency, it can get crazy for guys that aren't that good. And Zach Tom he's really good. I think. And he's still getting better. He's still growing as a player. So, yeah, I think it's a really good contract for the Packers. I have no issues with it. It should age well. He's in the prime of his career. And like I said, I think there's still room for him to grow. He had even mentioned that he thought he had a good year last year, but he thought he could have been better because he didn't have an offseason last year. If you remember, he'd torn his pec, so he kind of missed all the offseason stuff, came back in training camp, and he kind of thought that set him back a little bit as far as his strength goes. So now that he's healthy, had the full off season, we'll see what he looks like, you know, obviously during the season, but it should help him too. So yeah, I think all around really nice piece of business for the Packers to get done ahead of training camp. So there's no questions, at least about one offensive lineman at training camp, and he's locked in. And yeah, it's good deal. Good deal all around.
Yeah, I think it's a great deal. I think it's like that meme from Inglourious Basterds. Damn good deal. You take that deal, I'll take that deal. Damn good deal. I don't see any bad with it. You know, I think they paid. I think they got good value. You know, I think when you've got a guy that is close to that top of his position, you know, top five, top three, arguments for, you know, top two, not two, and you don't have to pay top of the market for him, you know, living down here in this DFW market, that's one of Jerry's favorite things to do is, you know, pay a top 15 guy number one money. And so I'm glad to see that the Packers do better business than that. You know, I think it's a good deal for Tom. I mean, obviously he's getting paid. You can't be mad about that. I think he's getting paid the right amount. You know, he's not a left tackle, which would be the more premier tackle of the tackle positions, I guess. But man, if he's not one of the best right tackles, and may end up being one of the, you know, the best right tackle in the league here in the next few years, that deal looks great. It's not, you know, it's a 4-year deal. So, you know, this will come up again in the near future, right? You know, year three, yeah, they'll start having to talk about that and figure something out. But, you know, he's going into the prime of his career here. The next 4 years, you should get the best football from Zach Tom, you know, unless he's able to be kind of, you know, one of those freaks of nature that plays well into his 30s at a high level. Would love to see that, but, you know, you can't. That's not the norm. It's definitely the exception, not the rule. So, yeah, I'm just happy to see them get a great deal into the prime of his career. You're answering this question right going into training camp. Isn't it funny how do you think this was intentional timing? Do you think this was already done?
I don't think it was necessarily done, but I think it was one of those, like, not a hard deadline, but, like, both sides probably wanted it done by the start of training camp, so there were no questions as far as, you know, is it – Zach Tom would have been asked about it whenever he was available to the media. Goody would have been asked about it. LaFleur would have been asked about it. Plus, there was the potential, like, does the agent recommend Zach Tom not to practice? Now, he practiced throughout the offseason and was there all the time, but maybe some point the agent would have said, you know what, show up, but don't practice. Like, we see guys that happens to all the time around the NFL. Jordan Love, that happened to last year when they were working on his contract at the start of training camp. He missed the first few days because he was holding himself out and he wanted to protect himself. He knew the deal was going to get done, but, you know, he missed those first few practices. So I almost wonder if they, you know, both sides wanted to avoid any chance of that, and they wanted to have him on the field right away from the first day of training camp. So, yeah, I think it was just one of those, let's get it done by the start of training camp. It wasn't necessarily like, get it done now, or, you know, it was never going to get done, or they'd have to wait to the end of the season. But it was like one of those soft deadlines, like, this is the target, let's try to have it done by the start of camp. And they fortunately were able to get it done, and there's no lingering questions as far as Zach Tom goes.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, I just think that there's a little bit of a pattern here where the Packers seem to get things done, like, right going into training camp, get a little bit of a good news momentum boost kind of thing. You know, like you said, with Jordan Love getting it done right before training camp. And, it almost felt to me like maybe this was already done. And they're like, hey, let's announce this right at the beginning of training camp, you know, a little extra boost. But no, I love it. And then we got a good question here from our guy, Tyler Streber. Good to have you back, Tyler. Does this mean we're probably letting Rashid walk after the year, let Morgan or Belton battle it out for left tackle in 26? I don't know. I think that this year has a lot to do with how that will play out. Unless you are trading him, I think you keep Walker, you know, this year, and you got to try to keep these guys as long as you can. You want as much depth as you can get. I think Walker probably realizes that he can be a starting NFL or a left tackle in the NFL. So if he does lose out to Morgan, I wouldn't expect him to hang around. But I don't know. Do you think this has any bearing on Rashid Walker? I don't know that it does.
Well, I don't know if this move does, but I think the drafting of Morgan, drafting of Belton, and the fact that obviously like Zach Tom staying a tackle probably plays into it, and the fact that they haven't extended Walker yet. Like, most likely, I think, yeah, they're going to let him walk at the end of the year, but let's see how it plays out. Like, if he has a really good year and Morgan gets hurt again, or Morgan, you know, shows that he's not a left tackle, that he's not ready to, then I think maybe there's a chance they're able to keep him. But they're obviously, I mean, they've been talking up this competition at left tackle with Morgan and Walker. And I think ultimately, if Morgan doesn't win it right away, I think at some point he will. And when that might be 2026, he's the left tackle. So yeah, I think Walker probably won't get another contract. And just look at it financially. Like, they paid Tom, big contract to Aaron Banks in free agency. Like, you can't pay them all, right? Like, so you're paying Elton a lot of money for at least one more year. Most likely they're going to move on from Rashid Walker, but there's still, you know, there's still a possibility that he just plays so well that they just say, we can't let him leave. Like, he's our guy. But I think 2026, your left tackle is either Jordan Morgan or Anthony Belton.
Yeah. I think that would probably be the way that the Packers had envisioned that going. But I do think that Rashid Walker has an opportunity to play well enough to say, you know what, maybe I should be here. Maybe you guys want to pay me. I mean, at the end of the day, they turned a seventh round pick into a starting left tackle, whether it's him or not, whether it's here or not, in Green Bay. That's a win for Goody for sure. And
sure,
it depends on kind of what he wants, you know, and these players definitely have human preferences, right? Some of these guys we've seen, I think we heard something from Tucker Kraft earlier this offseason that said, like, hey, man, I'll take whatever I got to take to stay in Green Bay. You know, he wants to stay here. And we've seen some of that enthusiasm before. I think, you know, Aaron Jones was one of those guys that really wanted to stay here. But, you know, if Rashid Walker really wants to stay in Green Bay, you know, that maybe that does make a lot more sense, because he's not a guy that's saying, no, I'm going to test the market, I'm going to make top of the market, whatever it is. He's just a guy that says, look, I like this, I'm good at it here, let's do it here. I would lean towards Walker will be gone, but I think that he definitely has an opportunity to have a say in that still at this point. So we'll see how that ends up playing out. And it looks like Bill just kind of took the words out of my mouth there. Bill, good to see you, man. Glad you're with us. He said Walker will be gone. Tom, Banks, Monk, Morgan, Belton, starting lineup in 2026. Yeah, okay. So you're saying Tom goes over to left tackle, or am I just reading that backwards? That'd be an interesting one. If he went over to left tackle, you get Belton out at right tackle. Morgan goes into guard. Oh man, Monk wins the center job, and this looks like it projects Jenkins is not part of the picture, huh? That's an interesting thought. All right, you know, I might have to expand on that one, because I think that's the other question going into training camp is what goes on with Elgin Jenkins. Is he okay with moving to center? Is there a financial, stipulation around that? You know, because he probably understands his value as a right guard versus as a center. But that's an interesting projection there, Tim. I mean, are we looking at losing Jenkins here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a strong possibility. He's going to be 30 years old, one more year on his contract. They've already paid him twice. We know how they don't pay too many players, too many non-quarterbacks a third contract. It's rare for them. Mm-hmm. And there's already an issue right now. You know, he wants to get paid more guaranteed money up front, which I understand. And
totally.
We don't know how happy he is to make that move from left guard to center. Obviously, that's part of, you know, the frustration, I guess, or maybe it's just the money part of it. But yeah, I think it's a very real possibility that Jenkins isn't on the team in 2026.
Wow. Okay. So we went from expecting maybe a restructure or an extension or something like that for Jenkins, and now maybe he's gone.
I mean, it could happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is his last year in Green Bay. It's not, if I think it could work out either way. And I know that's kind of,
well, I think he fits the mold of the type of guy that they would give a third contract to. I mean, he's been really good from day one. He's played a lot of ball, hasn't missed a lot of ball. Right. You know, depending on how he plays this year as well. But yeah, I think that he definitely fits that mold of a guy that, like, kind of a Kenny Clark type that they would give a third contract to, especially because, again, like 30, if you're a healthy guy, that's not an old age for an O-lineman. You know, some of these guys play well into their 30s.
Yeah, and they love his versatility, and he's a good locker room guy for them. And so, like, I could see them extending him on a shorter term deal that's kind of team friendly. But I also could see them taking a hard stance like they do with so many veterans that get to that point where it's their third contract or now 30 years old, and they have some younger players already there that they're developing. So I could see it going either way with Jenkins, but at this point, if you're saying, like, is he on the roster or not, pick a side, I would say no, he's not in 2026. I think maybe they kick him some more money in 2025 to make him happy, and then kind of see how he does at center. And if he plays really well, which he's more than capable of doing at center, and stays healthy and still looks fresh, and, you know, there's not the wear and tear on his body, then yeah, I think it's a possibility they extend him. But again, you're paying Tom, you're paying Banks. They only have so much money to go around, and they got a lot of free agents coming up at other positions. So, like, you got to spread that money around. So are they going to pay three offensive linemen a ton of money? It's going to be tough to do that.
Especially non-left tackles, right?
Especially we're not non-left
talking
tackles.
About a franchise left tackle unless right. Rashid Walker steps into that.
Right. And Rashid Walker, like, even if Rashid Walker, like, I think he's above average. I don't think he's a, you know, Pro Bowl, All-Pro level tackle, but I think he's an above average left tackle. Even average ones or ones that are slightly below get a ton of money. So, like, Rashid Walker is going to get paid whether it's in Green Bay or not.
True.
So it just makes it hard to fit all these guys under the cap, right? Now, it helps that you have Morgan and you have Belton on their rookie contract, so they're not making a ton of money for a few years, which is good. So maybe there's a way to keep Jenkins, but I have my doubts. I hope I'm wrong. I'd love to see him get more money, you know, up front this year to make him happy and get a little bit, you know, a short term 2 or 3 year extension and continue on as their center. Like, I think it makes sense. But financially and just the way the Packers view these guys and what they're historically have done, I have my doubts about whether it's going to work out with him long term.
Yeah, it does seem like there's a lot of ifs going into this season, and I wonder. I don't know that. What is the structure of his current contract? Do you know much about that? Let's see.
I could look it up. I don't have it in front of me. Like, I
pull it up real quick because I wonder where he's at. It feels like a lot relies on this season, you know. And you mentioned the cap. You know, we got one of our other buddies in here, Rev Trev. Good to see you, sir. Glad you're joining us. Good evening, guys. He says critics are saying we paid Tom too much. Do you guys agree? I do not. But when you're looking at the whole picture, the best five picture here and looking forward, you do at least have to expect you're going to have a successful left tackle, whether it's Rashid Walker, Jordan Morgan, or maybe competition leads to somebody else or injuries. So you do have to pay a left tackle here in the next few years. So it kind of depends on how you need to spread it out. You got the Banks contract. Now you got Tom. Whether you need to pay Jordan Morgan or Rashid Walker plays lights out and has an all-pro season and you got to pay him because, you know, you can't let an all-pro left tackle go away. That's where I think it becomes really tough. And I don't know that I would even say that you overpaid for Tom, because I think if you're making a decision between Tom and Jenkins, which kind of feels like that's what this is, you got to go Tom. You know, you got to go the tackle. You've got some other potential there in the interior line. You just invested in Aaron Banks. So I don't think there's a scenario where you paid Tom too much as far as what we know. Obviously, he could get injured and never play another down, and that would stink. But that, you know, again, it's like you made the best decision you could at the time. So, yeah, I don't know that they – I wouldn't say they paid him too much. You know, I think that they didn't go out – kind of like what I was saying before – you know, you got other teams like Jerry Jones. When a guy is good, he'll go out and he'll overpay him. He'll pay him top of market, stuff like that. He gets the Cowboys in cap trouble all the time doing that crap. And now they can't afford to pay Micah Parsons. They're in the same problem. And so, yeah, you know, when you look at this, this is a guy that you have no problem saying has the potential to be the top right tackle in the NFL. Maybe even the top left tackle if he continues to progress and goes over that position. I think that's a further stretch than the top right tackle. I don't think that's a stretch at all. He could be the top right tackle in the league this season if he plays well. And then absolutely not. Like, it's a great deal. And these deals are only getting richer as you go. So, you know, 2-3 years into this deal, I think it looks phenomenal if he's staying healthy. And that's the way we have to look at these things. We can't really look at them as they are now. You have to project forward. You know, especially with quarterbacks, and it's kind of fun to pick on Jerry Jones a little bit and what he did with Dak Prescott. He really missed the timing of Prescott's re-signings and windows, and he overpaid him both times because of it. The Packers have had they've done a very good job of not doing that, of not missing those windows, not overpaying in those windows. I can't remember the last guy that I looked at the contract and was like, gosh, I can't believe the Packers are paying him that much. That's crazy. Like, I don't remember being upset about it. Maybe Aaron Rodgers. It might be like, hey, man, you could have taken less than $50 million and tried to go all in. But anyway, we don't need to rehash those types of things. But other than that, I don't feel like the Packers are guilty of overpaying people a whole lot, at least at the time they make the decision. Certainly, there's been deals like Jaire Alexander where you pay him and then he doesn't play because he's injured, and that's just different. You can't project or predict those injuries. So, I don't know. Tim, do you think, is there a scenario where this, you know, again, besides injuries, where they're overpaying here?
I don't think they're overpaying. No, I'm perfectly happy with this contract. I think they did a really good deal. I actually was expecting it to be a little bit more average per year. And I think we'll look back on it in a year or two when some of these other guys sign contracts on the offensive line, whether with their own teams or in free agency, and they get paid a lot more. We're going to be like, man, they got Jenkins or they got Zach Tom at a really good price because he's better than these guys who are signing bigger deals. No, I think it's a really, really fine contract for the Packers. I have no issues with it. But other than injury, it will age well. Like, he's not a player that I think is going to, like, now that he got paid, he's going to not be the same player. You know, like, he'll be there and he'll be damn good.
Yeah, he doesn't seem
like
that.
Week in and week out. No, he'll be really good week in and week out. He'll be the same guy. Like I said earlier, I think he's still ascending as a player. He can still get better. And he's right tackle. I know there's been some mention in our comments, like, maybe he's a left tackle in 2026. Like, maybe there's a lot to figure out between now and 2026. So I'm just going to say he's the long-term right tackle. And I'm perfectly fine with that because, yeah, he's one of the few really good right tackles in football. I mean, there's Sewell, there's Lane Johnson, a couple others as well, but he's right up there after those first couple guys with the ability to get better. So, yeah, I think it's a really good deal for the Packers. I have no issues with it.
No, I totally agree. And a good point here by Tyler. It says guaranteed money allowed them to keep the annual salary down, I think. And 30-plus million signing bonus is the highest for a lineman in NFL history. I did not know that. That's true? Did you see that?
Yeah. He beat, I think it was like 30.2 million he got signing, but and Bakhtiari had 30 million. I think Laramie Tunsil
had just nudged right over it. Look at that.
It's the way the Packers like to do their contracts. They like the big signing bonuses because they can spread them out over the years and they give fewer like guarantees. It's just the Packers do their contracts differently than most teams. And part of that is to give the big signing bonuses. So that's why that $30 million, so that they don't have to do a whole lot of can kicking with the contract down the line. So that's why. Good for him. That's a lot of money as a signing.
That's a lot of money. I think he's earned it. You know, I think this is a situation where you can pay a guy for both what he's done and hopefully what he will do. Right. You know, it's a good signing bonus. He's played a lot of good football already, you know, and hopefully, like you're saying, his best football is in front of him. I think that's usually what the Packers say is when they sign a guy like this, they believe his best football is in front of him. So, yeah, I think on both sides there, it's a good-looking deal. To be able to reward somebody who's played well, but also to be able to expect that they're going to get better is, I don't know that there's a better deal you can make as a GM than getting a player like that. And that's kind of how Josh Jacobs looked, Xavier McKinney, right? Like, they both played really good football, but also seemingly have their best football ahead of them. So, you know, I think that's kind of the, I don't know, it seems like the criteria, the formula, whatever it is. And that's where, you know, I don't know that that's not true for Jenkins either, right? I mean, if Jenkins can go off and switch to center and become the best center in the league for the next 3-4 years, maybe that's his best football, right? And then, you know, your center with Jordan Love entering his prime, that's a critical position. You want somebody who is stable, consistent, you know, all that. You know, as personalities go, I would imagine that Jenkins fits that mold quite well. So I'm just very curious and interested to see how the competition on the O-line really shakes out this year. It seems, that's why I was wondering about Jenkins' contract, because it does seem like a lot can hinge on this year. And I'm just wondering, does he need more assurance before he actually plays under this contract this year, or can you get him to play under this contract and see what happens?
Well, I think that's what the Packers are trying to do. Like, the report today from Rob Domofsky was that they're willing to talk to him, but they want to wait until during the season when he's settled in at center. Now, that could be just like a negotiating thing, you know.
Right.
It seems like he wants some kind of insurances because his guaranteed money's up. What we don't know, and because he hasn't talked to the media, and who knows when he will, but like, was he going to be unhappy either way, or is it more like, hey, you're moving me to center, and now, like, I want to be paid? Like, if they would have kept him at left guard, would he still be unhappy with his contract, or would he be showing up ready to go and been practicing all offseason? Like, that's kind of what
I don't think that
about.
This is unprecedented. I mean, we've seen guys, especially when the tag is involved, there's a lot of nitpicking about, well, am I a tight end or am I a receiver? Am I a linebacker or am I a defensive end? You know, those types of kind of tweener players that do a lot of responsibilities of both sides, right? Tight ends catch a lot of balls, but they also block, you know, and defensive ends sometimes get called linebackers. Linebackers get called defensive ends. There's a mixture. I mean, shoot, Rashawn Gary's a defensive tackle. We didn't even know that. But according to NFL Network, guy plays defensive tackle now. So, these guys do pay close attention to that stuff. You know, we've seen that a lot in the past. So I wouldn't be surprised if that was, you know, at least part of the issue, right? Now, maybe he was already saying, look, it's time for me to get a new deal. Oh, by the way, you're trying to push me to a position where I have less negotiating leverage. I don't know about all that. You know, I think that that's maybe, at least in my mind, that's where it would kind of, I would get a few flags thrown up, right? Like, okay, hang on a second. Like, I'm about to have to negotiate a new deal with you guys. We all know that's coming regardless of the position. And I played some good ball at this position, but now you want me to move to another position that, well, we don't know if I'll play good ball at that position. We think that I will, but even at the top of the league, I'm going to have less of an earning potential than I would at my other position. So I think that this, and we talked about this a little bit before, I do think that this is on the Packers to show him that, like, hey, yeah, look, you know, we want to do right by you. We don't know if you'll be the best center in the league, but we think you'll be damn near close to it. And, you know, so here's some financial security to make you right. Otherwise, it doesn't look great. It goes back to that issue of, like, the Packers kind of playing hardball and maybe sometimes doing it in the wrong way. But in this one, you at least have the situation where there's a lot of other guys there, right? There's a lot of developmental guys there, like Monk. We don't know what he's going to look like, but there's, you know, seems like his arrow's pointing up. That's where I wonder how much are the Packers willing to kind of play poker with Jenkins on this to say, let's figure out how this goes and see, you know, what we need to do. And that's, I don't know. I don't know if he'll play under this contract.
Well, I mean, I think he's going to have to if they're not able to rework it for him. Like,
well, yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know what the Packers are going to do. Like, I still can't. I don't think they're going to give him much money if they do anything. Like, maybe they're putting some kind of incentives for him. some kind of bonus structure, whatever, kick him some, a little bit more money to make him happy in 2025. But beyond 2025, I don't think they're going to do anything. And so I have his contract. The cap hit this year 17.6, which isn't bad. The problem is there's no guaranteed money left, and that's what he wants. And then 2026, his cap hit goes up to 24.8 million. And to cut him, it's just 4.8 million as a dead cap hit. So
yeah, it becomes more attractive. Yep.
Yep. And he, you know, he's 30 in the 31 in 2026, no guaranteed money. So he's looking at this and he knows the team he plays for. He's seen plenty of veterans walk out the door in Green Bay in his time there. He yep. knows their history, right? So he's looking at it like, I don't have guaranteed money left. I know, you know, what's probably facing me. So I want to get paid a little more this year before you potentially let me go at the end of the season. And I can't blame him for that. And I wonder too, like, where was the communication with this? Did this start before Aaron Banks was signed, after, you know, like, was this kind of like, hey, you know, at the end of the season, his exit interview, like, hey, maybe you'll play center next year, depending on what happens. Or was this like, we just signed Aaron Banks, now you're moving to center. Like, I wonder what happened, like, when he knew
yeah. about it. The order of that does make things different.
And it just, like, you could have signed Aaron Banks and said, you know what, we're going to move Aaron Banks. Yes, he's a left guard. We're going to put him at right guard. We'll keep Elton where he's at, and we'll figure out center. Maybe it's Sean Ryan. Maybe it's Jacob.
Well, Monk. I think there's still a world where that happens.
Maybe. And maybe that's the resolution. You know, maybe that's how this works out. But I don't know. This is just like one of those things with the Packers where this guy's been such a solid player, really good player, right. Versatile player. He's played all over the offensive line, right? He had a torn ACL. That's really been his only big injury for you. Damn good player, Pro Bowl kind of level player, versatility, good locker room guy, never been an issue. You've paid him his second contract. Like, and now, like, you're planning on, and I know you have to do this as a franchise, but you're planning on his replacement already, but you want him to still be on your team. You want him to change positions, and you're not going to, like, do anything for him. It's almost like, can you make him happy? Like, give him a little bit of money. Or, like, we don't always have to be, and this is probably a much deeper discussion, but, like, I just feel like sometimes they're looking too far ahead at what their roster is in 2 years from now instead of, like, what you have now. And, like, there's a world where you can keep Elton Jenkins and make him happy and, like, still have, you know, the Jacob Monks of the world on the roster too. Like, where they're providing you depth and you're not having to rely on them to replace Elton Jenkins because you still have the damn good football player Elton Jenkins on your team. Like, I know you can't pay everyone, and I understand that, but he's been such a good, consistent player for you. Maybe you find a way to pay him some money and keep him at least for another 2-3 years while he still probably has good football ahead of him. Then to move on, right? And now you have to figure out, well, who's our long-term center, or who's our long-term, you know, we're going to move the offensive line and we're going to juggle these positions all the time. Like, I don't know. I see that what the Packers do, and they're pretty ruthless with it. And Russ Ball and Goody do a good job. And most of the time it works out. But it's just sometimes it's like, we have a good player. Just keep him and make him happy. Like, you don't have to give him everything, but, like, just make him happy now so you can be a good football team. It helps your team.
Totally agree. Yeah. And that's where I wonder how this is playing out, right? Is this, maybe this isn't an issue at all. Maybe Jenkins is totally cool. Let me get my paycheck this year and then we'll see how it goes. Maybe he's not worried about it and is willing to take their timeline. I mean, for what it's worth, and this always is with a grain of salt, but I'm looking at the depth chart on PFF, and Jenkins is already listed as a starting center there. We got Morgan as the starting right guard, Tom right tackle, Banks left guard, Walker left tackle. So again, that probably doesn't mean anything, but yeah, to your point, like, have depth, like, do this thing where you do have a few guys for when the injuries happen, because it doesn't, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when with injuries. And if you have a season that's relatively injury free, that's the anomaly, you know, so enjoy it, but you sure you can't plan for it. So yeah, I think that while you have this depth, you know, you've got Belton in there, you've got Monk in there. I mean, besides the guys that are your, you know, the top five that I just mentioned, you've got good depth, you know, and that's where it's like, yeah, don't ruin that. Don't run that off. Like, figure out a way to make that work this season, you know? And even if it's some sort of like, I don't want to say like a phony extension, but like do an extension, like a 1 or 2 year extension where, you know, gives you an excuse to give him a signing bonus, give him a nice chunk of cash, and then basically leave everything after this year up to question to see how this year goes. I mean, I don't know how that works in NFL GM and agent language, but there's got to be something like that they could do.
Just give him something. And I, again, like, I totally think he's on the roster. He's starting week one for this team this year, but it's like after this year, I don't know. I think there's a real possibility they move on at the end of 2025, but like for this year, like you have the cap space, like kick him a little bit of money. Like at this point at guard, he probably outperformed his contract and is underpaid. So like give him a little something, incentivize him, make him happy because you're making that switch. He's a key player in the offensive line. Like, get it done. And it's not, then you can still make the decision that we'll see how 2025 goes. And at the end of 2025, you may still move on, but at least get him something now to, you know, make him happy, settle this issue and get your linemen in there and practicing. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't play hardball with Elgton Jenkins. Like, just figure out a way to make it work.
Especially before this season. If you're going to play hardball, do it with him after this season.
Right.
And I don't want to be dramatic, but this does feel like there's a lot of pieces that they've pulled together for this season. This feels like a better version of 2021. Whereas 2021 was where they're doing the all-in thing, the run it back thing, whatever it was. Like, you knew there was a lot of talent coming back, but that was probably it for that group. Whereas with this group, I feel like they've gotten a lot of guys together. A lot has been pulled together. You've upgraded the depth in a lot of places. You've maintained veteran leadership in important places. You know, it really does feel like there's a lot of potential held up in this year. And I don't think a lot of people outside of the Packers feel that about the Packers this year. Which may work in their favor. They tend to do well when they're dogs, but it just feels to me like, yeah, you know, if you're going to move on from Jenkins, do it after this year, like hold it all together, get these guys in here. You got, you know, depth at every position, take advantage of that. You know, don't get too cute. Don't get too, you know, poker faced about it. That's what I would ask for. And I mean, I got to hand it over to Rev here because he does encapsulate it perfect. In Goot, I trust when it comes to football. And it's true. Appreciate you for that, Rev Trap, man. It's true. When Goot makes a decision, he's usually right, whether we like it or not. And I'll follow, right? But I guess from the seat that we sit in, yes, I do hope that Jenkins will be part of this group this year and have a chance to make it a much harder decision for them next year. But yeah, you know, speaking of depth, we're about to go into training camp here. The depth chart is kind of the starting line, and it will evolve all throughout training camp from week to week, day to day almost. So we're going to kind of fly through this here, man, because, I mean, even looking at this from the PFF angle, like the way that they've laid out the O-line, it's kind of fun to document a starting point for this team. And I want to turn it to you to decide what our starting point will be here. What position do you think will look the most different at the end of camp?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say offensive line, but I think that's more of, see, for me, offensive line is more like who's going to be where. Like Belton, they drafted him as a tackle, but I'm sure he's going to see a lot of snaps at guard.
Right.
To me, like the big one of the big storylines is left tackle. Like, is it really a competition with Walker and Morgan? But like, I think that it's going to be really telling. Like, if Morgan's taking a lot of snaps at guard, then that's not a true competition. But if he's taking them all at left tackle, then it's a real competition. It's going to be like how those guys shake out. Like, if does Jenkins definitely stay at center, right? Is Monk in the running there at center? If they decide to move Jenkins back to guard, like, it's more so where those guys shake out. I think the starters in my, I don't think they're going to really change. I think it's Walker, Banks, Jenkins, Sean Ryan, and then Zach Tom. Like, I think those are the ones that you pencil in going in the beginning of camp. I don't think that's going to change by the end of the camp. I think it's got a chance with Morgan, maybe at left tackle or even right guard. Beyond offensive line, what's going to change a lot? I don't know. I have a hard time. I guess there's a chance defensive line.
That's where I was going. Weird,
like Kenny Clark, Rashawn Gary are starters. I think there's a chance. Like, Van Ness should be, and if he's not, that's a problem. If he's not,
yeah.
But I think if he doesn't take that step, and some of the, you know, Sorrell or Enigbare or Brenton Cox, like, there's a possibility they jump him. And then I think Devontae Wyatt should be a starter. But if he can't show that he can be consistent and play the run well, they're going to, you know, TJ Slayton, that's an under-the-radar loss. Maybe Carl Brooks, maybe a Colby Wooden next to Kenny Clark to start. I guess the two lines. And then, I mean, the receiver's the other one. But I think that's going to change within the game. You know, like, I don't think they're going to have a straight, like, number one, number two, number three receiver anyway.
They're going to use the receivers in packages to scheme against specific defenses.
Right.
1 week, Jaden Reed will go off. The other week, it'll be Dobbs. It'll be Golden. It just kind of depends on what the weakness of the defense is and how you're going to exploit that. Sometimes it's going to be speed. Yeah. Sometimes it's going to be size. Sometimes it's going to be the running game. And that's where, I think a lot of people get frustrated by this whole, like, who's your receiver one? And they sort of dodge the question. But there's really just not an answer for the question from their perspective. Because it's like, look, we're just game planning week to week. And, you know, this week this guy might have a good opportunity. And this week that guy is going to have a good opportunity. And, you know, I know people don't necessarily like that because you want your top dog, your Justin Jefferson type guy to just like root for and draft in your fantasy league and all that. And, you know, we loved it when Devontae Adams was here. And I honestly think you're in a better position with where the Packers are than having that top dog receiver. And that's what, obviously Goot believes that too. But, you know, I don't think that the depth chart will change all that much. Kind of like, I kind of share the same sentiment you said about the offensive lines. Like, I think your top guys are going to be your top guys. I don't think there's going to be any surprises in that top five. Maybe the biggest thing could be like, all right, how does Savion Williams do? Does he climb up and demand snaps? How does Mecole Hardman do? Does he climb up and demand snaps? But, you know, obviously Christian Watson's out of the picture until later in the season. But then they just brought in Will Shepard today, you know, the receiver from Colorado. He was at the Shrine game, the Shrine Bowl I was able to cover earlier this offseason. And he looked good at the Shrine Bowl. He looks a lot like Alan Lazard to me, just the way that he's got he's a big body. He had one catch at the Shrine Bowl that was bad to the bone. It was a one-handed snag. It was beautiful. I think I even have a video of it, but they keep adding bodies to this room, and you just wonder like who fits where and until when, right? Like, you know, there's just no way come cut down day that most of these guys are going to be in there. So I wonder if Mecole Hardman survives. I wonder how Bo Melton fares. I wonder where Malik Heath fits in, but you know, the guys above that, they're not going anywhere, you know, so they're going to be there. For me, it's the defensive line that has the most potential to change. And the reason I say that is I'm you know, I'm kind of high on the guys out of Georgia. You got, you know, Brinson and Stackhouse. And you mentioned that gap that is there, the void that is left by a massive void, by the way, by TJ Slayton, who is a massive human. I feel like these guys have a really good chance to slot into that, you know, and Stackhouse is undrafted. Brinson drafted late in the was it sixth or seventh round? So those aren't guys that necessarily you would have a whole lot of hype around going into training camp. But because of that void of the big man, I think that they have a huge opportunity to climb in there and be a regular rotation on the depth chart. You know, so, and then you've got the other guys that you're hoping, you know, come, you know, to fruition. You're hoping that Devontae Wyatt's able to stay healthy and really rise maybe to being the leader of that group, you know, give Kenny Clark someone to hand off to. You're hoping to see Kenny Clark come alive again. You know, and then Carl Brooks obviously has shown a lot of potential. And then you got the other guys, all of our rush ends, and Colby Wooden's in there. I think he's more of a rush end at this point. But yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of guys there that you're like, okay, you know, you want to see something from them, but you really, I mean, nobody's entrenched. You know what I mean? That obviously, I don't think like guys like Devontae Wyatt will get cut or Kenny Clark will get cut. But no. As far as just an opportunity to climb the depth chart, make the depth chart look more different at the end than it did at the beginning, and, you know, get into that rotation, I think those guys have the biggest opportunity. You know, otherwise, you look around the depth chart, you look around the roster, man, the top of the depth charts are pretty well in hand. There's not a lot of competition out there. You know, I mean, there is competition, but there's not a lot of number one roles up for grabs. You know,
right.
We're not worried about who's RB1 at this point. We're not worried about who's tight end one at this point. We're not worried about most of the linebackers. That's all going to fit, you know, work itself out. The safeties, you know, maybe there's a little bit of a question about whether Bullard will get his nose in there. You know, will Oladapo get his nose in there? How does the cornerback room look? That's probably for me the other one. And even then, I don't know about the top of the depth chart having much potential to change, but there's a whole lot going on after number three. And that one will be interesting, I think, to see how it shakes out. So as we're kind of just talking through these different positions in the depth charts, you know, I'll just name some names, but at, you know, at the top of your cornerback depth chart, you've obviously got Keyshawn Nixon and Nate Hobbs, and then you've got Carrington Valentine close behind those guys. There's your top three right there. But then you got guys that the Packers have shown, you know, a specific liking for, you know, and they drafted Micah Robinson in the seventh round. You know, they've done well with guys in the seventh round, Carrington Valentine being one of them. They gave Jonathan Baldwin, I believe he was an undrafted free agent. They gave him quite a bit of money, more than they would a normal undrafted free agent. You know, and then there's some others that I've heard have been making, you know, Kamal Hayden, Kalen King, those guys are hanging around making some noise. Even Kazir Brown, I've heard, is, you know, he's made a few plays. So there's an interesting mix there in the bottom half of the cornerback depth chart that could be very, very important, because we all know how injuries happen in this league. So that's where it's just like, those are probably the two to me, is the D-line and the cornerbacks that have the most potential to just be way different towards the end of camp and going into the regular season.
Yeah.
But am I off base and like being overly confident about the rest of these positions? Like, I don't know. I don't want to be too flippant with that.
No, I think you're right. I think there's a lot of competition throughout the roster, but I don't think there's a lot of competition for like starting roles. Like, you pretty much know who the starters are going to be. Now there's like questions about like who plays where, especially like who's your nickel, you know, and that's going to change too. Like sometimes it's going to be Hobbs, sometimes it may be Nixon, it's going to be Bullard, right? They're going to move those guys around. But for the most part, and again, going back to the line, like, I guess it's, you know, does Morgan win the left tackle job, or maybe he ends up at right guard, maybe Belton ends up at right guard. Like, yeah, there's different scenarios, but I think for the most part, we know who their starters are going to be and most of the key backups. Like, I don't think there's a ton of competition, but I just don't think it's necessarily for, you know, the first spot on the depth chart positions, right? But you mentioned like cornerback, the three guys are set, the top three are set. But after that, it falls off and you don't know what you have. And I think what they're probably going to do is, and they may bring in some street free agent guys, you know, we may see some guys at it, but like they're going to see what they have with King and Robinson and Hayden and those guys, let them compete. But that definitely is going to be a position I could see them adding somebody from another team, whether that's a trade or off the waiver wire or whatever, before the start of the season. Like that's a position to watch, but I don't think anything they do there is going to change the top three. It's going to be, you know, positions 4 and 5 at cornerback that could change. The D-line, I think they pretty much have the guys that they're going to have, but I think what's going to be interesting will be how they replace TJ Slayton, a really good run defender, and their run defense was much improved last year considering where it was through the Joe Barry years. They were a really good run defense, which was crazy to see after so many years of being one of the worst run defenses in the league. No but like kidding. Guys like Rashawn Gary, like he improved a ton against the run last year. Slayton was really good too, and now you lose him, and they didn't really replace him. We'll see, like if Brinson or Stackhouse, but Stackhouse is an undrafted guy. He has, you know, there's no one. He very well may not make the team, and Brinson being a late round pick, who knows if he makes the team. I don't know if Carl Brooks and Kobe Wooden are that kind of run-stuffing defensive tackle. So
They're not.
So maybe it's Kenny Clark moving back to the nose more. Maybe that'll help things. And that's a tough position or tough area to judge, too, in training camp because there's so little contact is your run defense. Like, so that's going to have to play out in preseason games and what you can in practice. But that'll be interesting is, like, who's the nose tackle, right? Who's going to be your run stuffer? Maybe that guy's on the roster. Maybe that guy's on another team's roster. But yeah, I think overall, you made great points. Like those are D-line, cornerback, but it's more so like not necessarily the starters, but it's depth or it's like specific roles to watch that are unsettled. But like we know who the starters are going to be, right, at those positions. It's just who fills in behind them.
Yeah. Yeah. And certainly when injuries strike, who's going to get the opportunity to be the next man up? And at that point, are you in good shape or are you where you were with your offensive line in the playoff game against the Eagles this last year? You know, yeah. And that's the question. You know, obviously this time of year, there's optimism flowing. Nobody's lost a game yet. So everybody's the best and, you know, everything's perfect. No injuries yet, at least very few, you know. So there's tons of optimism, and then reality hits and you're like, oh dang. All right. Well, all right. So now this guy's injured. He's out of the picture. You thought he'd be part of the picture. Now, you know, what's your depth look like? Oh dang. Depth's not good. Oh dang. All right. So that can get out of hand really quick. And that's where I'm kind of looking at this from a, you know, perspective of like, who's the closest to getting tossed into the fire. That's where I think those D linemen are. And yeah, to your point, like Kobe Wooden is 273 pounds. You know what I mean? Like he's not a defensive tackle. That's like a defensive tackle from the 80s or 90s, you know?
Well, I did see that he has put on weight this offseason for, you know.
Okay. Fair enough.
We'll see how much that makes a difference. But yeah, I don't see him replacing TJ Slayton. So then like what's his role going to be, right? Like Carl Brooks is not small, but he's not big. He's not what you think of when you think of a run stuffing defensive tackle.
Right. No, but and Carl Brooks, you know, he's almost at 300, you know, 296 is what they've got listed at here. So he, at least from a size perspective, has a little bit more of a business being down in there. But that's where I'm looking at Nazir Stackhouse. I'm like, brother's 6'4, you know, 320. That's different. That is a different size, you know, and then Brinson's also, he's, you know, 6'4", 310. You know, they're pretty close there and they're both pretty athletic guys. You know, they're not just big blobs, right? They've got some athleticism. Stackhouse is one that I got to see at the Shrine Bowl. He wasn't necessarily, you know, the MVP of the Shrine Bowl, but he had some good reps in the one-on-ones, you know, and there's only so much a D lineman's going to do in one game, but, no, he's got a big physical presence. And I think a lot of times that is that's a big factor, right? Like obviously you can't just be big and be good at the in the NFL. There's a lot more involved. But they have that size to replace a TJ Slayton, to fill that middle, to, you know, be the run stuffers and keep up with this age of the NFL that is starting to load up with absolute monsters on the D line, you know, led by the Eagles, kind of, you know, taking everybody out of Georgia that's 6'6", 340 and can run a 4.440 or something. So, you know, that's what I'm looking at. Like, from a size perspective, who can fill in there? Because you've got good pass rush talent. You know, Carl Brooks is a good pass rushing D lineman. Even Devontae Wyatt is a good pass rushing D lineman. And then you've got, at their best, you've got some good potential in your edge rushers with, you know, we can get into that later. But you don't have a lot of those big blocky dudes that just, they're going to require more than one offensive lineman. They're going to be able to bust open the middle of those offensive lines, give centers and guards hell. You need that guy, you know, and TJ Slayton wasn't, you know, it's not like he was incredibly talented. I think they let him walk because they believe that there was a lot of talent coming out in this draft class and you can get maybe the same level of production at a lower cost. I was surprised that it took them as long as it did for them to participate in that depth in this draft class. But again, like, a Nazir Stackhouse in a different draft might have been like a fifth round pick. Brinson went in the sixth round, he might have been a fourth round pick. You know, like, the quality of D lineman has to kind of almost be adjusted because of how deep this draft was, and it was deep. So we'll see how that ends up playing out. You know, I mean, kind of like last year, they knew that they needed some safeties, and who knew that Evan Williams would be the one who emerges as the best of the bunch after you took, you know, Bullard and Oladapo. All those guys were talked about as good safeties coming out last year. So, you know, you just got to see how it plays out. These guys don't always play up or down to their draft status. And that's why I bring those two up. I think those guys have a really strong chance of getting in there, you know. So I want to call out the rest of the D line, you know, just as we're talking about this, we brought a lot of attention to the Georgia guys there. But a couple of other names that are on the roster that might end up making a splash. You got, Keith Randolph Jr. He's 6'5", 305 out of Illinois. Looks like he came out in 2024. I don't know where he came from. I haven't heard that name before, but he's on there. And then looks like James Esther, who is 6'3", 298, Northern Illinois, also came out in 2024. Not a lot there. I don't know who those guys are. They're not the big imposing size that we're talking about. You know, and then the next biggest guy on your D-line is Kenny Clark, you know, 314, 315, something like that. So, yeah, you know, I think that Devontae Wyatt is probably – the potential next leader of this line group, but I don't think that he's the same type of D lineman that those guys are. That's why, you know, the path to the top of the depth chart for them is probably the shortest of anybody else on this roster that's down there at the bottom or a rookie or whatever. Cause you're that big guy role and there's just not a lot of those guys on this roster, you know? So, but yeah, you know, it's going to be fun, man. The other thing I think that will be, you know, we didn't talk about it much, but we probably can spend a few minutes on it here towards the end, is the edge guys, our pass rushers. You know, a lot, it's kind of popular to be down on LVN. Oh, he's going to be a bust. He's not going to make it. But the guy's nickname is Hercules. Let's give him a chance. See what he's got this year. You obviously have Rashawn Gary. You want to see him continue to be great. Guys that we've seen flashes from, Aaron Mosby, Brenton Cox. Even Colby Wooden, it looks like he's listed on the edge now instead of in the middle. But then, you know, and Kingsley Inagbare, I can't forget him. So all of these guys you've seen flashes from, they're pretty good. They're all right, right? You know, they're kind of that above average maybe when they're playing well. They're, you know, they're no all pros or pro bowlers in this bunch. And then you got your rookies, your Colin Oliver and your Baron Sorrell. I think they have an opportunity. You know what I mean? I mean, like, guys like Kingsley and Agbari have been here for years now, and they're not bad, but a guy like that isn't telling me that I can't pass him on the depth chart. You know what I mean?
No, I totally agree. I think there's been a lot of talk, like, from Packers fans in the offseason especially since the draft, like, hey, they may trade this guy, you know, Romeo Doubs or one of the offensive linemen. Like, I think it's much more realistic that they trade somebody like Kingsley and Ibarra. Like, he could very easily get passed by the two rookies, by Brenton Cox. And you never know. You get the cut down day. Maybe he's the odd man out and you can, you know, flip him for a seventh round pick or something like that.
Yeah.
Nothing against him. I think he's solid as like your number four, number five defensive end, but he's been here long enough. That's kind of what he is. Like, he's not going to get better than that. I don't think that's a for that role to have that player. Like, yeah, he's nice if he's your fourth edge rusher, right?
Yeah.
But that's what he is. I think there's much more potential there for Sorrell. I think Cox as a pass rusher, once he got on the field last year, was better than Ibarra's really been throughout his career. So yeah, I think it's going to be tough, you know, for Ibarra to keep his role, I guess, especially if these younger guys show that they're ready to play and ready to contribute and get on the field. But as far as the edge rushers go, it's so much of it's going to depend on Lucas Van Ness. Like, can he break through this year? Like, can he show progress, right? Like, we just haven't seen it yet. Too soon, I still think, to give up on him yet, but this is really, it's kind of his make or break year, right? Like, if he doesn't show it now, 3 years in.
Yeah.
That's, you probably know
what I think that's probably it. Yeah, you know what you have at that point.
Yeah, so I think the edge rusher room, a lot's going to, you know, you want, if Rashawn Gary has a huge year and puts up, you know, big numbers, great. That can carry your edge rushers. But a lot of their progress and your depth and consistency, it's going to come down to what you get from Van Ness and some of the guys behind him, but mostly Van Ness. Like, you're relying on him a lot.
Yeah. And if he hits, then that's great. You know, if you can get a season here where Gary and Van Ness are, you know, both playing to their potential on the edges, man, like, all of a sudden this defense is scary, you know, because we've had some fun talking about Edger and Cooper, and he's a very popular person to talk about right now with this roster. But, man, when he's the one lurking in the middle and you got two effective pass rushers on the outsides, man, whoo-wee, things are going to get fun to watch this defense. It's going to be very fun to watch this defense if that is what comes to fruition. But yeah, I mean, this is, I don't know. I think this is a good season for Packers fans to be optimistic about what's going on and what this team looks like going into training camp. Cause there's a ton of competition, but like we're saying, there's not a ton of opportunities for starting jobs. There's a lot of starting jobs that are locked up, and rightfully so. And the competition beneath them is great because you need that depth. But at the end of the day, the less starting question marks you have going into training camp, the better. You know, legitimate question marks. There's question marks everywhere. But at the end of the day, yeah, that's what you hope for. So when we talk about starting points and what position could look different on the depth chart, the most different by the end of camp, there's just not a lot of them. There's not a lot that you don't know what you're getting. Hopefully we get some pleasant surprises, right? You get some folks that, you know, maybe like the Georgia guys on the D line start to show some flashes in camp, but, or maybe some of the cornerbacks that we've been hoping would rise up. But other than that, you know, like, yeah, you want to see the guys that we now have seen as the starters for the last couple of years. You want to see them take that next step and just sort of look like they're gelled together, you know, look like they're ready to go in this training camp. Look like it's, I don't want to say easy, but you know, from a technical perspective, things should start to look easier for some of these guys. You know, the receivers, the tight ends, some of these guys that over the last couple of years we've been making excuses, oh, they're young, you know, and it's like, no, I don't want to hear that anymore. I don't want to hear they're young. I don't want to hear they're the youngest team in the league. I don't want to hear any of that. All these guys have multiple years of starting under the belt now, and now you want to see them be comfortable. You want to see the game slow down for them. I think that there's a lot of positions that's happening for right now. And when all that happens at once, just there's a lot of special potential there. So strap in, Packers fans. Here we go. Training camp starts this week, right? Did the guys report this today? Did they already report?
They report on Tuesday. Yeah, Tuesday report. First practice on Wednesday. So, yeah.
All right.
First few practices without pads. So the real stuff doesn't start until they put the pads on. But
we will have 2025 Packers football to talk about next Monday.
That's awesome.
Next podcast. Heck yeah.
That's awesome.
We made it.
We made it
to the other side of this awful off-season desert, man. You just got to like crawl through and it's brutal. It's been brutal. I've been finding myself the last few weekends just like wishing that there was football on TV.
Yeah.
And I watched one of those Savannah Banana baseball games. Have you watched one of those?
I have not, no.
That's how desperate I was to watch some sort of sport.
It's been tough lately. It's been really tough, but we've made it. And now, you know, I don't know when the first preseason game is, at a Hall of Fame game, but from that point on, it's coming up, I'm sure.
I think it's like 2 weeks away, man. Yeah. Yeah. It's
and then
quick.
From there through the Super Bowl in February, it's going to be every weekend.
Every week. We made it.
So we made it. Like, we're there.
Rev's here with us. We made it, Rev. We made it. We need football and we're going to have it. So, yeah, man. So next Monday we'll have, it may not be padded practice, but we'll have some stuff to talk about. We'll see where guys have lined up.
Yeah.
We'll see a little bit of one-on-ones maybe with the DBs and the receivers. We'll see Jordan Love slanging the rock. We're going to see some stuff. So yeah, it's exciting.
Real football.
And then we're going to get amped up for our first preseason game. And then we're going to get to the third preseason game. We're going to be like, oh man, like, can we get real football now?
Yeah. Yeah. Get us to the real season. That's all right.
Then we're going to blink and the playoffs are going to be here. So yeah, it's all right. We'll be here every Monday with y'all. We'll be breaking them down. We'll be talking every ounce of football that we can get. And we're only going to get a little bit more every week from here on out. So take it in, Packers fans. We got some fun stuff coming up. It's a fun season. The whole point of being a fan is to have fun, man. We got to remind people of that sometimes. People get so miserable being fans. Now, when you're a Bears fan, I get it. You're just in a miserable permanent state. It is what it is. You guys are born into that. That's not my problem. That's your problem. But the rest of them, man, you know, like Packers fans, we got no reason to be upset about things. We should be happy about things. So be happy, be excited. Real football is coming. Come back and join us next Monday night, 9:30 p.m. Central, streaming live right here on the Packers Talk Network YouTube channel. Hop over here, hit that subscribe button for us. We love all you subscribers hanging out with us every week. And getting that comment section fired up. You guys always have some good contributions, and you make the conversation better. It's the more the merrier. You know, I mean, Tim, I love you, man. We have great conversations, but it's always a lot more fun when we get those comment sections fired up. They bring some extra juice, you know?
Absolutely.
So, but come on back, Packers fans. We'll be here next week. We are looking forward to covering the training camp and all the things that are coming and happening with it. And look, the 60th Super Bowl champions will be crowned this season. I think that the Packers should be it. And that's just that. So come on back and let's talk about it next week, Packers fans. Of course, as always, go Pack.